Chapter 31 Defending the Emperor. Chinese Emperor Qin Shi Huangdi wanted to be remembered for all eternity. In 221 BC, this brutal, violent ruler turned China from a patchwork of states into a single kingdom, only to die 11 years later at the age of just 39. There was an ancient Chinese belief that mercury brought everlasting life, and so Shi Huangdi had swallowed countless mercury pills. Instead of making him immortal, they probably killed him. The emperor died at the coast, but he was to be buried some way inland. As his coffin traveled slowly by carriage, accompanied by trusted royal officials, rotting fish was used to mask the smell of the decomposing body. Shi Huangdi had started building his burial mound about 40 kilometers east of Xuan in northwestern China, long before he became emperor. But work intensified during his reign. Some 700,000 men dug and shaped his burial place at the foot of the prominent Mount Li. Then a small army of craftspeople created an entire underground kingdom. The workers dug down until they came to a series of freshwater springs. Then they filled the sepulchre with replicas of palaces and other buildings in special caverns. A bronze outer coffin was fashioned for the emperor. The ceilings mimicked the night sky with pearls as stars. According to a guide to Chinese civilization written in 94 BC, mercury was used to model the ocean and major rivers, which even appeared to flow. Once again, mercury, the substance that probably killed Shi Huangdi, was being used as a symbol of immortality. This makes the burial mound a dangerous place. Soil samples taken around the tomb display high levels of contamination. Written sources tell us that craftsmen set up mechanical crossbows primed to shoot any intruders. Immediately after Shi Huangdi's funeral, those who had worked on the tomb were sealed inside to prevent them from passing on any information. Shi Huangdi's burial mound rises 43 meters above the surrounding countryside. The builders planted trees and bushes so that it blended into the landscape. The emperor's burial place was part of a huge death park surrounded by a 5-kilometer-long outer wall. What else lay within the enclosure remained a secret until 1974, when some workers were digging a well 2.5 kilometers east of the unexcavated burial mound. There they found a full-sized terracotta or clay soldier, then another, and another. A team of archaeologists and conservation experts found themselves digging up an entire royal regiment. These are the famed terracotta warriors. The team excavation was so large that no one person can take overall credit for the work. Unfortunately, I was unable to visit the excavation up close and could only see the warriors at a distance as a tourist. And so my description must be a general one. But I was astounded at the sight. The figures are incredibly realistic. They stood in 11 parallel corridors, each about 200 meters long. A roof of woven matting, strengthened with clay, covered the passageways. I could easily imagine a real military force. The men parade in 40 ranks, mostly 4 abreast. Alert and disciplined, every figure stands up straight, ready for battle. The troops wear replica coats of mail, originally made of stone slates, joined by copper wires that opened and closed on the right side. They are without helmets, looking forward. Each man has a different face, as if they were all modeled from actual people, but they are expressionless and apparently without emotion. The figures now are all light brown in color, with only a few traces of paint. But when the regiment was buried, they all had brightly painted uniforms. The effect must have been dazzling. Almost 200 bowmen and crossbowmen stand in 3 rows in front. They wear cotton garments, modeled in terracotta, but no armor, as those using bows and crossbows shot from a distance rather than fighting in close quarters. The ranks took turns to fire volleys so that there would be a continuous stream of arrows or crossbow bolts in the air. Modern experiments show that the crossbows of the time had a range of about 200 meters. 6 chariots and 3 unarmored infantry squads parade behind the archers. Four terracotta horses pulled the chariots, each with a charioteer. Two or three soldiers would have accompanied each one into battle. Two of the chariots were command vehicles for officers, from where drums would be beaten or bells struck to signal an advance or a retreat. Some of the officers have flowing mustaches and wear a slight smile. I found the scene overwhelming. These were attack soldiers who went into battle without shields. We know from historical records that soldiers of the Qin dynasty were ferocious. Their commanders believed that attack was the best form of defense. Their close-range fighting would have been bloody and vicious. Everyone fought with bronze swords and spears, or with halberds, combined spears and battle axes that could kill a man with a single blow. Xuandi protected himself with a powerful, well-trained regiment, but they guarded him in terracotta, perhaps because such elite soldiers were too valuable to sacrifice. There was more. A second pit contained just over 1,500 soldiers and horses, divided into four groups. In one corner, ranks of unarmored spearmen surrounded kneeling archers. The rest of the pit held chariots, with 64 in one unit alone. It was all meant to send out a message of vigilance, of soldiers on guard against a surprise attack. A third pit, dug in 1977, after 5 years of arduous excavation and conservation work, held the chariot of the commander and his guards. They were exceptionally tall men, at over 1.9 meters, some 10 centimeters taller than the average soldier in Pit 1. Just uncovering the fragile figures was a delicate exercise in teamwork. The local clay was heavy enough to allow the sculpting of full-size figures. Each figure had been modeled in parts and then assembled, the head made separately from the body. This allowed the artists to produce more or less standardized figures, while the heads were sculpted as individual portraits. The conservation work has been extremely demanding. Quite apart from reassembling many of the figures, the conservators have also tried to discover what color uniforms they wore from tiny paint fragments. The slow-moving conservation work has been completed with an eye to the tourist trade. Emperor Xuandi's Terracotta Regiment has become a major international attraction, visited by tens of thousands of people every year. This is archaeology carried out on the public stage, where archaeologists face problems such as overcrowding and air pollution affecting the figures. The discoveries keep on coming. A pit found in 1998, southwest of the burial mound, held thousands of armor fragments and helmets and was perhaps the site of an armory. But there is far more appearing from the soil. A year later, another pit, just to the south, yielded 11 clay figures and a bronze cauldron. Judging by the gestures of the exquisite figures, these were acrobats, perhaps intended to entertain the emperor in the afterlife. Other pits contained 15 musicians who had once held instruments, long decayed, perhaps to divert the emperor as he walked in his garden. 46 bronze birds from yet another pit stood on a platform by a water channel. One even had a bronze worm in its beak. It is chance finds like these that instantly transport you back into the past. The bird with its worm reminds you that the ancients also appreciated beauty, quiet ponds, and wildlife. Xuandi's park is awe-inspiring in its size and complexity. For instance, the emperor's stables lay outside the central area, a place where real horses were buried with kneeling terracotta grooms. Why they had to be living horses, we do not know. Perhaps they were some of the emperor's favorites, in a land where horses had high prestige. There are unconfirmed reports of a pit full of terracotta models of the emperor's women. A nearby series of mass graves reminds us of the enormous human cost of the emperor's quest for a happy immortality. As recently as 2012, a huge palace complex 90 meters long and 250 meters wide came to light, complete with central courtyard and a main building overlooking it. There will be archaeologists working on Xuandi's memorials for generations. And there remains the burial mound. Chinese archaeologists have paused, for they doubt that they yet have the technical expertise or the funds to excavate and conserve the burial chamber. And of course, there is the danger posed by mercury contamination. So far, they have relied on magnetometers, devices that measure the different levels of magnetism deep inside the mound. Such instruments react to iron, brick, burned soil, and even decayed wood and other organic materials. The magnetometers have revealed that an underground palace lies at the center of the mound, surrounded by a wall. Experts also know that there is an abundance of metal within the burial chamber and an excellent drainage system. Unusually high levels of mercury are present, perhaps confirming the description of the interior from 94 BC. See above. Intense controversy surrounds the potential excavation of Shuandi's tomb. Archaeologists argue that the methods they currently have at their disposal are not adequate, as the damage caused to some of the terracotta soldiers during excavation shows. Nevertheless, some people push for immediate excavation, claiming that it will deter looters. Others point to the huge tourist potential and the economic benefits offered by the royal tomb. All of this raises an important question for archaeologists everywhere. Should the needs of the tourist industry take priority over pure archaeology? The hordes of visitors who swarm over sites such as the Pyramids of Giza in Egypt or Angkor Wat in Cambodia raise real fears about wear and tear at important sites. Chinese archaeologists know that the excavation of Shuandi's burial mound will be the most important excavation of the century, if not of all time. Quite rightly, they want to wait until they have the necessary tools and knowledge to conduct what will be a unique research project. As the debate rumbles on, the Chinese are gaining experience by digging other royal burials. In 74 BC, the Han clan overthrew Emperor Liu He, 92 to 59 BC, after a mere 27 days in power. He was dethroned because he was a playboy with an inclination to pleasures and loose morals. He also had no talent as a leader. Instead, high officials made him the Marquis of Heihun, a small kingdom in the north of Zhangji near Nanchang. Despite his disgrace, Liu was honored with a lavish walled cemetery containing 10 tombs, including one for his wife. A research team under archaeologist Jin Lang has been excavating the cemetery since 2011. Liu's burial included gold ingots and plates, amassing 78 kilograms of gold alone. 10 tons of bronze coins and 10 cauldrons accompanied the marquee. There were lamps in the form of wild geese and chariots with real horses that had been sacrificed. Liu's coffin was raised in 2015 when the entire inner section of the tomb was removed using hydraulic lifts and taken to a nearby research center for detailed analysis. A seal inside the coffin bears his name, and his identity has been confirmed from writing on some of the accompanying bronze items. The tomb is unique, having been totally undisturbed. The marquis's body has been tested for DNA to establish his relationship to other Han nobles. As was the custom, jade ornaments covered his eyes, nose, ears, and mouth. Liu's burial is proof of the astonishing wealth of Han China 2,000 years ago. Shuandi's tomb is an example of the huge challenges that Chinese archaeologists of the future will face, especially with rich burials. Their task will be made somewhat easier by increasingly sophisticated scientific methods such as remote sensing, DNA, and studies of the isotopic or radioactive content of human bones that can reveal changes in diet through life. They know that long-term team projects will be the rule, and that discovery must be balanced with conservation and with the demands of the enormous domestic tourist industry. We can be sure that some of the best archaeology of the future will come from China, and we can be certain that spectacular discoveries await us.